people think like, oh, well, if they're marketing this as, you know, a scoop is equivalent to 10 servings of fruits and vegetables, then I don't have to worry about the rest of my diet.
Welcome to the Eat for Endurance podcast. My name is Claire Shorenstein, and I'm a registered dietitian and running coach based in New York City. My goal for this podcast, aside from having fun, of course, is to demonstrate that there is no one-size-fits-all style of eating. Rather, there are many different pathways towards individualized health and sports performance. I explore this in my athlete nutrition profiles, as well as in interviews with fellow dietitians on their areas of expertise. I am so excited about today's topic. It's one that I've been meaning to cover for a very long time. It's one that I get asked about all the time with my own clients. We are talking all about supplements today. So get ready because we're going to dive into a lot of stuff. And I have joining me on the show another amazing dietitian, a sports dietitian specifically, named Kelly Jones. She is super experienced. She's been a dietitian for 12 years. She is just so impressive in every way. She's also a mom. She's a former Division I athlete, and she's based in the Philadelphia area. You can go check her out. She'll give you all her info. I highly recommend you do. Really, really impressed by her and had such an awesome conversation with her. So in terms of what we covered, well, supplements are, it's a huge umbrella, obviously. You know, it's covering sports foods, vitamins and minerals, performance supplements. There are just so many things on the market right now. It's mind-boggling. And obviously not all of those things are safe. They're not legal. They're not helpful. It just may not be worth it. And maybe it's not backed by science. So we're really going to get into all of this stuff. And whether you're a recreational athlete, whether you're a collegiate or pro athlete, or you're kind of just a very casual exerciser, this is a very relevant and important discussion. I think you should listen to it carefully. So without further ado, please enjoy my conversation with Kelly Jones on supplements. Hey, Kelly, welcome to the Eat for Endurance podcast. How are you doing today?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me.
Yes. And we're going to be covering today supplements and athletes. I'm super excited about this topic. It's one that I've been being asked, you know, I've just always asked lots of questions about supplements, and it's one that I myself am always looking to explore more and learn about. So, yeah. And I was very impressed by all these awesome, like, graphics that you have on your Instagram account. And, so I really wanted to get you on the show to talk all about it. So again, thanks for coming on. But before we dive into today's topic, can you just share your background, including, you know, yourself as an athlete and as a dietitian?
Sure. So, because you said it first, we'll start with athlete, I guess. I was a competitive swimmer growing up. I also, you know, did things like softball and dance, and then, you know, decided to go full on with swimming in high school, and then competed in college at the Division I level too, and really enjoyed it. And, you know, just always knew that I noticed a difference when I ate well versus didn't. When I was in high school, my mom got pretty sick, and doctors wanted to prescribe all these medications, some suggested surgeries. And then after seeing a dietitian, she ended up getting a lot better and, you know, just making some simple changes to her diet. She did a little bit more elimination diet type of stuff, but it really changed the way that our whole family was eating. And I noticed an immediate improvement. So ever since then, I kind of knew that I wanted to help others feel better and perform better with food. And so that's kind of what led me to become a dietitian. And so I obviously was swimming while I was in school for nutrition, but also, you know, got a little bit of cloudy with all the crazy stuff that you see in the media too.
Yes,
and it probably wasn't until my senior year with my sports nutrition classes and ex-phys classes that everything sort of clicked. And I really saw what sports nutrition could do for you. So I, you know, went on to grad school and with my dietetic internship, and worked with some of the athletes at the University at Buffalo, where I was, and finished my grad degree with a concentration in exercise physiology. And then from there, you know, became a college professor, actually, at a community college. And that gave me some flexibility, because at that level, you're not doing research too. It gave me the flexibility to kind of slowly develop my own practice with sports nutrition. I had some experience from grad school, and then because it was teaching sports nutrition and, you know, working with some kinesiology experts in the college, really just kind of got to keep pushing forward with that. And again, slowly built my practice from there.
That's awesome. And you have such an impressive background. Your website looks so polished and beautiful. I was like browsing through it.
I can't take credit. My old website wouldn't have looked as nice because I did it myself. But once I was able to, I hired someone to take care of that for me.
My website is a total disaster. I mean, it's like the same. It's been forever. And I'm like, someday I will invest in that. But I look at websites like yours. Yeah. I look at websites like yours and I know it's like a huge investment with this stuff. And I'm just like, oh, that's what I need.
Yeah. And a time investment too for you, even though someone else is doing it. So thank you though.
Sure. But no, and you have a team. It looks like you have another dietitian who works with you and you do lots of media stuff. So you're kind of like doing multiple things here, which is awesome.
Yeah.
And you have your own podcast, which we started talking about briefly. What's it called?
So it's called Imperfect Health. So I actually co-host it with another dietitian, Kim Hoban. And we both had our sons around the same time and just really noticed then that so many women had such high expectations for themselves and were always trying to achieve this level of perfection that just doesn't exist. So we wanted to kind of merge our expertise in both nutrition and fitness and being moms and real women and try to, you know, talk about science with practical recommendations and then just help women feel a little bit more normal and okay with not achieving perfection.
I love it. That's an awesome message. And you said your son is 2.5 now?
Yeah, he's just over 2.5. So he's a handful.
Yeah. And you're expecting another one when?
I am end of April. I actually had to double check with my husband how far along I was the other day, because the second time around, I'm just like, what's happening? There's so much going on. Yeah. So yeah, I'm almost halfway there.
Awesome. No, I remember with my second, I just like kept forgetting exactly. I'm like, wait, how many weeks am I? I didn't take any photos. Couldn't care less. I'm just like,
I know.
Yeah. Right. Well, congrats. That's really awesome.
Thank you.
All right. So let's dive into today's topic again, supplements and athletes. This is a huge, huge, huge topic. It's a big umbrella when we mention just the word supplement. So we won't have time to cover everything, but we're going to touch on some of the ones that really frequently come up with our active clients and the ones that we feel are the most important. So let's start with vitamin and mineral supplements, just because we see this all the time, you know, and even among people who are not active, we really, you know, we see a ton of people taking like multivitamins or vitamin C, or how many times have you heard, oh, I take vitamin, you know, B complex for energy. You know, it's
or B12,
or B12, yeah, whatever, or vitamin C, you know, especially now with COVID. Oh, so you know, to boost my immune system and, you know, whatever else they think will help or at least won't hurt. But, you know, we know as dietitians that they may not help and they may actually hurt depending on what it is. So it's important that we don't just like throw things in our body willy nilly. And we do so, you know, if we're taking things, we're doing so for an exact reason and knowingly. Right. And also trusted brands, because of course supplements aren't regulated, which is not great, but, you know, obviously athletes have increased needs and including of specific nutrients. So, but at the same time, the evidence suggests that well-nourished athletes, and that's the really key phrase here, well-nourished athletes do not receive any performance benefits from vitamin mineral supplementation, right? So that's where it gets tricky, because how do you know if you're well-nourished and all of that good stuff? So why don't we just identify, let's start by identifying the specific micronutrients that we know athletes often have trouble with. So iron, calcium, and vitamin D. Those are often the ones that are highlighted, and you can, of course, bring attention to more if you'd like to. But when we're trying to use like a food first kind of approach, which obviously we're always doing as dietitians, what can athletes and especially women do to kind of try to ensure they're getting adequate amounts? Because it's really confusing. And I know this is a really big question, but I don't know, what kind of thoughts do you have, particularly with iron, calcium, and vitamin D? And obviously it depends on kind of what kind of diet you're following. I know you follow a plant forward diet and we don't get into all of that because that's a whole other topic. But yeah, what do you have to say about that?
Well, I think, you know, to start, you mentioned that evidence shows that as long as it's a well-nourished diet, that these extra amounts of them shouldn't necessarily be helpful for performance. But a lot of people who think that they have a well-nourished or healthful diet don't have enough variety. And I think the variety is key and why people tend to miss out on adequate amounts of these nutrients sometimes. Obviously, again, athletes do have higher needs, especially for iron, definitely for calcium. There's evidence on vitamin D, but the variety in your diet is really critical versus just like the broccoli, sweet potato, and chicken, you know, prepped for 4 nights a week. So I think to start, you know, that's really important. But then if you don't know that you're deficient in these things and you're just trying to make sure to prevent that, you know, iron is an interesting mineral because it is affected by a lot of different things in terms of its absorption. So while we can focus on, you know, if you are including meat in your diet, you know, beef is clearly a good source, but you'll get some from chicken. You'll get a little bit from egg yolk, not as much from fish. And then when it comes to plant sources, you can actually get plenty from things like lentils and beans, which if you're not eating meat, you're probably or hopefully eating plenty of those. And then a variety of different green vegetables, nuts and seeds and whole grains. So again, the variety in your diet is really what's critical there. But in terms of absorption, if you're having, you know, an iron-rich meal, let's say even it's breakfast, and you end up having a lot of iron in your breakfast meal, and that's when you're drinking your coffee. Caffeine and coffee can actually reduce iron absorption. So it's almost those little pairings that we have to be more aware of for people that do have a well-varied and healthful diet that can impact how we're going to actually use that nutrient and if it even gets to our bloodstream. High amounts of zinc and calcium and even high fiber. So if you're taking a fiber supplement, again, another supplement that you probably don't need if you're just focusing on the right foods, that can bind to iron and keep you from absorbing it. So that's really key. And then if you are concerned with it, again, you said especially females who are endurance athletes, any female of childbearing age, pairing iron with vitamin C is really helpful. So, you know, you can look at spinach and you know that there's both iron and vitamin C in there, which is great, but maybe with that spinach, you're having, you know, some mandarin oranges with it on a salad or something like that, that can increase the absorption a little bit better. But, you know, you can also have peppers and kiwi and broccoli and things like that, that are rich in vitamin C that you might not think about all the time. So that's what I would say for iron is really just focus on that variety, but think about those little nuances with the absorption too.
Should people go so far as to say at a breakfast meal, then like try, cause you know, dairy and caffeine, like those things are so commonly part of the meal, it's really hard to separate it out. So like, what is some practical advice you have in terms of trying to avoid those interactions?
Yeah. And I wouldn't worry so much about the dairy. I think it's more calcium supplements that are going to be competitive with the iron from food.
Okay.
So if you are taking a calcium supplement, then again, those are things that you want to probably work with a dietitian. A lot of doctors, unfortunately, aren't as aware of these nutrient interactions that occur. So, you know, speaking with someone can definitely be helpful so that you know that you're taking them at the right times and you're not having those interactions. But something like coffee or even a caffeinated tea, the recommendation tends to be have it an hour before or after the meal, which I think, you know, some people can get on board with. If you're an athlete or someone who's really active and you wake up and you're having coffee and a snack and then you're going to work out and then after that you're having your meal, then hopefully it won't be as big of a deal. And if it, you know, happens to be that once a week you're having it at the same time as your meal, whatever. But I wouldn't say avoid having the iron there, but maybe don't put in the extra effort if you're going to be pairing your coffee with your breakfast and there's no exception there for you.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. What about calcium?
Yeah, so calcium, obviously milk, everybody thinks of that, but pretty much, you know, the majority of other calcium sources are going to be plant foods. So if you're not drinking milk, then I do recommend having some sort of a non-dairy milk in your regular routine. And I kind of look at that as the supplement for someone who is dairy-free. Rather than taking a pill, you're probably going to absorb it better from the food itself. So make sure that if you have a non-dairy milk, it's fortified with calcium. Some aren't. And if people are trying to have a too, quote, clean of a diet and they're having something that isn't fortified, then you're really missing out on that nutrient. But you also get it from a variety of beans, especially white beans, tahini, which is a sesame paste. I love to make dressings out of it.
I love tahini.
Bake with it. It's delicious.
So good.
Cruciferous vegetables. So Brussels sprouts, broccoli, cabbage, bok choy, even okra has some calcium. So again, that variety in plant foods there, I think is really important. And again, the whole foods kind of mentality versus the convenience foods all the time. You know, I have plenty of packaged foods in my house. I know you get it. You're a mom too. So, you know, those convenience items are necessary, but if you can work towards making the bulk of your diet whole foods, then you're probably going to be getting a lot more of these nutrients in too.
Absolutely. Now, vitamin D is one that is, of course, not as frequently found in foods, but it is found in fortified dairy and non-dairy milks. What are your thoughts on vitamin D and supplementation?
Yeah, vitamin D is a tough one. And I do tend to recommend vitamin D supplements probably more than any other when, mm-hmm. whether it's an athlete or a non-athlete, honestly. Mm-hmm. And, in terms of athletes, we know that vitamin D has a role in fast twitch muscle function. It plays a role in, our mental health, which can affect how we feel towards our workouts and, you know, mm-hmm. how well we're doing with our training. There's also a role with immunity and inflammation. So there's a lot there that we, you know, want to make sure we're getting enough. And some people, even though when they spend a lot of time in the sun in the summer, aren't going to convert it into enough vitamin D in the body. And you really only know that if you're getting your blood levels tested. So because yeah. the best food source other than the fortified dairy and non-dairy milks is fatty fish, which people also tend to mm-hmm. not eat enough of, mm-hmm. a supplement is usually what I recommend. And for athletes, there's actually some good articles out there. Fellow dietitian Kelly Pritchett has actually done some research on vitamin D, but there's mm-hmm. another published study, Vitamin D in the Athlete, that was published in 2018. And that suggests that blood levels of should be considered adequate versus the 30 for the general yeah. population when you're looking at athletes, and anywhere between like 2000 to 5000 IU supplements a day can be recommended, which is a lot higher than you might think. Yeah.
I usually think of like the 2000, but not up to 5000.
Mm-hmm. Right. And it depends on your level of activity. If you're not a professional athlete and you're not doing like so many hours, then maybe that 5000 really isn't necessary. But I really am big on people getting their D tested if you're able to with your yes. insurance twice a year. But if not, I actually tell people to do it very late summer or early fall, because if you're low then after the summer, then you know that you're really low.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I know there's also like a COVID link, isn't it, with vitamin D? I remember reading something mm-hmm. about vitamin D and COVID risk or something. I don't know.
No, I covered that on a local TV station because they were looking at a lot of, there actually have been a lot of studies. So I think it was 3 or maybe even 4 at this point studies came out, and it's a correlation. We don't have cause and effect, obviously, with like anything COVID related.
Yes.
There was a correlation where people with more severe symptoms or people who had passed away from COVID were more likely to have vitamin D insufficiency or deficiency. Mm-hmm. So being even that borderline put people at higher risk. And I know that there's about 8 studies at least going where they're trying to determine an appropriate supplement dose, which hopefully we don't have to even get to the point where we have the data from those studies to have to be prescribing that long term.
Yeah, absolutely. Are there any other nutrients that you'd like to point out? I know since, you're not vegan, but you do adopt more of a plant based diet, like would B12 be one you want to address, or anything else that comes to mind?
If someone that's listening right now is following a vegan diet, or even if your plant-based diet or plant forward diet, whatever you want to call it, vegetarian diet, you include eggs and fish, let's say, but you only do that twice a month, you should really look at your diet as a vegan diet in terms of what you might need to supplement with. So in those cases, if the intake of those foods is really infrequent, I would recommend a B12 supplement to that population. I'm sure you're going to get it in fortified foods like the non-dairy milks if you're including those regularly. Yeah. Nutritional yeast can be a good way to get it, but it's a good idea to have it, because usually it doesn't show, the deficiency doesn't usually show up until years down the road after adopting a diet like that too. And it kind of just hits you in the face.
Yep. Awesome. Cool. Now, okay. So one of the things I know I recommend, and I'm sure you do too, is just regular blood work, right? Mm-hmm. Just especially with athletes and making sure, and especially with women and especially with vegans, because that increases risk of deficiency. So regular blood work, testing, iron levels and other things, obviously calcium, you don't know, because that's, you know, maintained in the bloodstream is regular, but if supplementation is required because, say, there's an iron deficiency or maybe there's an injury that requires maybe some vitamin D or calcium supplementation, do you have any personal, like, favorites for brands? Or, one of the things I saw on Instagram that I really liked was your explanation of iron supplementation, because obviously there are some that can cause side effects, and it can be confusing for people just figuring out which ones to take, and they're Googling around and looking on Amazon or wherever they find things, and they don't know which one to get. And, and there's the whole question mark of like, what is actually a trusted brand versus not? And, you know, obviously, like, you know, I mean, I don't know if you have any brand affiliations or not, I'm not aware, but I'm just wondering if you have any recommendation or advice when it comes to like someone who needs supplementation.
Yeah. So, you know, with iron, from the research that I have done, and I just kind of updated the research that I've done about a month or two ago, because I did a little series on Instagram. Ferrous bisglycinate is supposed to be the best in terms of reducing the chances of constipation and being best absorbed, which really kind of go hand in hand. If you're not absorbing it well, it's going to stay in your gut and maybe cause some of those problems. So that's the most common complaint of iron supplements, is that they can cause constipation. So that's the form that I recommend the most. With calcium, I already said, you know, if you can, I kind of more recommend that you just add in a glass of milk or a glass of non-dairy milk a day, because it's going to be absorbed way, way better from food. But in terms of brands, I like Thorne a lot, because they...
That's what I'm taking right now.
They're backed by so much research. Actually, my college roommate, who was a swimmer and went into dietetics too, she went on to get her PhD, and she's now, you know, one of their leads on the nutrition end too. So, you know, they have a lot of, you know, great sports nutrition researchers working for them, and the NSF certifications too, which for anyone who is doing anything professional or collegiate, if not NSF, then Informed Choice for Sport are really critical for most of those sports governing bodies, so that you know that you're not taking something that could be that could be compromising your ability to continue competing and your health, obviously, which is a part of that too. So in addition to Thorne, because it's not sold in many places, most people have to order online. I also like Now Brand. Full disclosure, I do work with them in a small capacity, but I had the opportunity to actually go to their facility, and they do all of the production and packaging in-house. And they have created some of like the gold standards for supplement testing and ensuring the quality of everything that they're doing. So I would never partner with a brand that did not have, you know, these high quality standards. And one of the reasons I like them too is because they are pretty economical. So supplements can get super expensive, and there's certainly other brands that I'm like, oh yeah, that brand seems safe, it seems great, but you know, it's maybe not at the level of Thorne, and it's, you know, costing you an arm and a leg. So those are the two that I tend to recommend, but a lot of Now products are not yet Informed Choice certified. Only their sport line is.
Okay. Got it. Got it. It definitely is very expensive. And Thorne, they have like the whole range, or are you just talking about iron for that one?
No, I think they're great for pretty much everything. So they have a vitamin D. I will say, you know, I think that you might talk about fish oil at another time, since we're talking vitamins and minerals now.
No, we can talk it now. Let's talk
I was going to say, in terms of brands, I also really like Nordic Naturals when it comes to fish oil. And they do have an NSF sport version. They have ones that are both the fish oil and the D, which is why I brought it up now, because then you're taking one supplement to get both together, if fish oil is something that you need to be taking anyway.
For listeners who may not know what that means, can you just briefly describe, when you say NSF sport, like certified or all that, like, what does that mean exactly?
Right. So NSF for Sport and Informed Choice for Sport are two third party organizations that do very rigorous testing on each batch of a supplement who is certified on that supplement's products. So let's say it was something like Thorne, and we were looking at their ferrous bisglycinate, their iron, every batch of that iron that comes out of the facility is tested, but they also test each batch of all the ingredients that go into that supplement. And that's to ensure that it's not containing any prescription drugs or anabolic steroids or anything else that could cause someone to test positive if they were to be drug tested as an athlete.
Yeah. So super important, obviously, if you are competing at a high level, but even just for the recreational athlete who's not being tested for things, like, you obviously want to make sure that what you're putting in your body is high quality. Exactly. And I see a lot of people are just like kind of going over to CVS or their local drugstore and just getting the generic brand of such and such, Costco or, you know, whatever it is. Like, how safe are those things?
And that's, you know, that's so hard, because we don't really know, because the FDA is not regulating supplements for their safety. They're not regulating the effectiveness of their claims, which is, I think, the hardest thing with sports nutrition, because it's getting a little bit better. Sports nutrition 5 years ago, like, the first three pages on Google are all going to be supplements, right? And that's not real sports nutrition. So that's where things get really sketchy, is that without these third-party verifications, you oftentimes don't really know. There was like an update to the Dietary Supplement Health and Education Act, which doesn't really do much. And they, you know, put in place these good manufacturing practices so that you could get an extra seal on your product if they think you're following them. But again, the testing just isn't very rigorous. And, you know, we're then dealing with the FTC coming back at people if there's enough reports of adverse effects from certain supplements. So it's just a very poorly regulated industry. And
yeah,
while I'd love to say that, like, sure, anything that you get at CVS or Costco will be fine, and it's more GNC than what you get on Amazon, you just really don't know.
Yeah, it's pretty scary, actually. Yeah. And it's funny too, because I get a lot of people, like, I'll get a client, and they're like, oh yeah, I'm, you know, they're paying like an arm and leg for this thing, and it's like this customized, you know, like you enter in your information on, so
I know what I mean,
and like you get like this monthly, like, or weekly, like, packet of pills that you're supposed to take every day, and it's like 15 pills, and I don't even know half the things that I'm like, what are these things?
I know, the marketing is just insane.
Yeah, and it's like for, it would be like, hello, Claire, here is your, you know, such, it's like all very like streamlined and like, I don't know, it's just crazy.
And then what, you're spending more on supplements than groceries.
Oh my, yeah, it's kind of that. Okay, two more in under this topic and then we'll move on. Oh my God, I just totally blanked him. Okay, so I was going to ask about, multivitamins. So multivitamins, we always hear about people being like, I'm going to take a multivitamin just to cover my bases, just to make sure, like, I probably don't need it, but just in case. And then people just pop one and be like, not a big deal, whatever, I'll pee it out. Or so what are your thoughts on multivitamins? Does anyone need a multivitamin ever? What do you think?
You know, I think that it's super individualized. I don't think that everyone needs to go pick up a multivitamin. I think that for maybe high school athletes, that could be the best population for it, because they're still growing. They have a high activity level. They have an erratic schedule. They really aren't caring much about what they're eating. So that might be the group that I say, okay, to try to prevent some of these deficiencies, like they'll just take that one thing a day, then okay. Yep. But for most people, as they get older and they have the opportunity to focus on building a better eating pattern, that's, you know, all the time going to be the better option. A multivitamin mineral supplement is giving you specific vitamins and minerals. We don't know in what form they could be interacting with each other. Like I said earlier, iron interferes with calcium and vice versa. So you take a women's multi, what's higher in those is those two nutrients. And what was the point, right? So then the other thing is that when you're not getting these nutrients from real foods, you're not going to be getting all the antioxidants and phytochemicals there that we know can have such a profound effect on our long-term health, and probably are affecting our daily energy levels and performance too. So, you know, if we've got over 30,000 different phytochemical antioxidants in foods that have been identified, then we want to be eating a variety of food to get these vitamins and minerals, and not trying to say, okay, I checked a box by taking the multi. So again, even if they can't hurt you, it's, to me, most of the time a waste of money.
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously, if you're pregnant, like, we take a prenatal vitamin, that's different, whole different situation. But for just the average person, most of the time, like, are you like actually telling clients, like, don't take that anymore? Or you're just like, sure, you can continue with it? Or what are you usually telling people?
A lot of times when I have a client that comes in and is taking a multi, they're also taking a handful of other things too. So I rarely see someone just taking a multi.
Yeah, seriously.
And then, you know, we evaluate their diet and I'm like, well, you could really benefit from doing this instead. And, you know, instead of spending your money and putting the effort into taking that pill, why don't we get you taking an omega-3 or, you know, maybe even something like magnesium or vitamin D, things like that, depending on what their needs are.
Yeah. So more specific things that we're identifying that they might need. So, okay. Speaking of omega-3, let's just talk about it now.
Sure.
Fish oil or flaxseed oil?
Capsules. Yeah. So I'm 100% fish oil, and I'm sure you know this and I'm preaching to the choir with you, but for listeners, when we're looking at flaxseed and walnuts and chia seeds, all great sources of quote omega-3, they're providing us with it in the form of ALA, which isn't going to do a whole lot in that form in our body. So ALA needs to be converted to EPA and DHA, which is the way that we would get it if we were eating fish. So if we are taking in that ALA, our bodies actually, as far as science shows us right now, don't do a very efficient job in converting it into the active forms. So you could be having plenty of omega-3, but just not in the right form that it's actually going to do its job in your body. So if someone is a vegan and listening, or if you are so against fish oil for whatever reason, algae oil supplements are your alternative, really. So that's
so not the flaxseed oil.
Correct.
Algae oil. I haven't even seen that one. Got it.
Yeah, and actually Nordic does have an algae oil because they do get a handful of vegan athletes. So that tends to be the one I recommend to them.
Oh, awesome. And what if someone is consuming fish regularly? Mm-hmm. You know, how much fish would they need to be taking in order to not need to take this kind of supplement?
So it's hard with athletes because, again, needs may be a little bit higher to deal with the inflammation and recovery and joint health and all of those things. So for the average person, it's recommended to have 2 servings of fatty fish a week, which would be about 3 ounces each serving. So it's not these huge portions either. When you're looking at athletes, you know, I kind of look at it as, even though I don't advocate for calorie counting, you know, if you probably require double the energy of someone who's not active, then maybe you need double the amount of omega-3, and maybe we're overshooting there, but maybe instead of 2 3-ounce portions, 2 6-ounce portions or something like that. And in addition to, you know, salmon and tuna and things like that, you do need to think about mercury content, which salmon, you don't really have to worry about, but albacore and ahi and yellowfin tuna are pretty high. So you don't want that to be something you're having 6 ounces of twice a week.
Yeah, absolutely. So are you pretty much recommending across the board with your clients or other people that they take fish oil supplements, especially if they're not then taking in fish?
It depends. Because I do have this more plant forward approach, I do attract clients that are also following a similar eating pattern to me. Not all do. Plenty of our clients that come to my practice are meat eaters too, but a lot of them are focusing more of their animal intake on fish. You know, they might be including salmon already twice a week in these bigger portions. And then I, you know, pretty much think that they're okay. If they have joint problems, sometimes, you know, it might be okay to have a little bit more, again, kind of as an insurance, but I think there's a lot of other things that you could focus on for that too.
Yeah. Oh man. Now I want to get you back on to talk about your plant forward approach diet. I've been getting so many requests for vegan athletes and talking about this stuff. And in my athlete nutrition profiles, I've interviewed people, who, you know, are, you know, high performing athletes who follow that diet, but not a dietitian. So yeah, maybe I'll get you back on. But anyways, okay. Stay with the topic. One more in this category. What about vitamin like powders? And I'm thinking about green drinks, like, you know, Athletic Greens, all that type of stuff. That's basically like, it seems like it's being marketed as like a multivitamin, but with like all these green things and other stuff.
Right.
And you see all over influencer pages and on podcasts and such. What are your thoughts on something like this?
So I think that, you know, the problem with them, the biggest problem with them is that people will look at it as a replacement for fruits and vegetables, kind of like the whole juice plus trend that happened. And people think like, oh, well, if they're marketing this as, you know, a scoop is equivalent to 10 servings of fruits and vegetables, then I don't have to worry about the rest of my diet. So I think that the mentality that it gives people is the worst part of it. The other thing, again, is like, what are you really getting there? So I think Athletic Greens that you mentioned actually does have NSF certification now. So if you want to spend your money on that and take that, that would be the one to go with. But I think there's a lot of other ones out there, especially the ones that are doing like almost entirely social media marketing and affiliate links and all those things you want to like pump the brakes and take a step back because you don't really know what you're getting sometimes, especially when, you know, some people will anecdotally say, I feel a little bit better. I think I have more energy. Even my mom started taking Athletic Greens and we were talking over the weekend. Like, I think I feel a little bit more energized. I'm like, okay, good for you, mom. Like, please still eat your fruits and vegetables. So I think that, you know, with some of the other products, you know, is there maybe some sort of stimulant in there if it's not NSF certified, that's what's making you feel better and kind of addicted to it. So I think that you need to, and I think this is the case with a lot of them, which we'll talk about performance supplements, but what's like the cost benefit analysis here? And is it causing you to have this mentality where you're replacing real foods with it? And I think that that's, you know, the problem.
No, absolutely. I laughed when you mentioned your mom because my husband, like, I mean, you know, as dietitians, like we get free samples all the time. We get stuff, whatever. So anyways, this box arrived. I'm like, what is this? And it says Athletic Greens. And I'm like, no, he didn't. And of course, like he like heard on a podcast or I don't know what it was. But, you know, he's like, oh, you know, it was on sale and I just wanted to try it. I almost like murdered him. I was like, what did you get this for? Sitting in our cupboard. And I was like, well, you better drink it then if you're good. But yeah. No, I mean, he was like, yeah, sure, it's fine. But yeah, no, I 100% agree. Awesome. Anything else you'd like to add to this category before we move on?
I don't think so. I think we covered a lot.
Yeah, I think so too. Okay. Another big part of the topic is protein powders. We're not going to get into like sports foods in terms of like gels and bars and all that stuff. I know we get tons of questions on that as well, but it's just too much. So I did want to talk about protein powders because even like myself, I struggle to find one that I like, or I mean, and also there's the whole question of like, is it even needed and all that, but you know, so many have like stevia or like just weird stuff in it, or I don't know. I find the whole protein powder situation very difficult, and I often get questions from people, but which one do you recommend? And I'm like, none of them, real food, I guess. But yeah. But at the same time, like there are situations, like I don't think there necessarily is a best one. First of all, I've definitely tried a lot of like horrible ones, But yeah, but there are situations where it is really useful, you know, like if you're going trail running and you're like in the middle of the mountains or whatever, and it's going to be wild before you drive back and you just need something really easy in the car and you don't want a bar or something like, yeah, a protein powder that you can just mix with some water is super handy. And so, yeah, anyways, I'd love for us to discuss the different types of powders that are out there. Like there's obviously whey and casein and hemp and peep and just like so many and mixtures of all of them. Yep. If it matters which one we choose based on what we're doing, the timing of it, and yeah, when it's even appropriate to use instead of reaching for real food.
Sure. So, you know, I know that you first mentioned too the stuff that's in there. So if you are going to have one, which I have, you know, a couple in my pantry, I think it's a good emergency food, I like to call it, where, you know, if you have a super busy schedule or you didn't get to plan for something, you know, plan what you were going to eat one day, or you haven't been to the grocery store, or again, like the situation you mentioned, if you're out trail running or you have different scheduling conflicts, it can be for sure useful. Especially for people with really high activity levels who have like higher protein needs, busy schedules. Yeah. But for the average person to say, okay, this is the protein powder I include on a daily basis, like find a food replacement and we need to work on your diet. When it comes to the other stuff that's in there too, I push people away for sure from anything with artificial sweeteners and even from most of the ones with sugar alcohols, because a lot of listeners probably don't know sugar alcohols, things that end in I-T-O-L, like erythritol and sorbitol, they can cause a lot of digestive distress, which is already a problem for a lot of athletes, especially in. That's something I say steer clear from. I'd rather you have something that has actual sugar added to it. You don't need to be afraid of it as an athlete anyway. And again, if you know there's some stevia there, just think about how it tastes. Like there's some I've tasted and I just can't get around having it on an even monthly basis because the stevia taste is so strong. So,
or even monk fruit. Like I can't.
Exactly. And I'm sure it has something to do with the quantity and the type they're using, like the taste of it. But again, you need the energy anyway. So it's hard to find a protein powder that doesn't include that though. So you have to kind of, you know, really pick and choose. So in terms of what they're made of, you know, whey is considered kind of a gold standard for research for decades in muscle protein synthesis and stimulating muscle growth either after a workout or when you're taking it throughout the day. If you're not including dairy, and even if you're, you know, including dairy in your diet, whey for some people in that concentrated form can cause some stomach discomfort. So I know some people, some past clients, even my personal trainer, who they drink milk, they like cheese, but whey itself just doesn't sit well with them. And if that's the case, then that's not going to be what's going to help your performance best. So soy is a pretty effective alternative in terms of protein quality, but there's actually a lot more research being conducted on pea protein isolate. And even though all of the essential amino acids aren't necessarily bringing the quality to as high as we're seeing with soy, something about it is, in a few studies, has shown that it was just as effective as whey in promoting muscle repair and growth, one with an endurance study and one with a strength training study. So I think that's pretty cool. And, you know, the way that you want to take that is, again, you don't need to include that every day, but, you know, if you find a pea protein or blend that you like, maybe pea and brown rice or pea and hemp blends, there's one from Manitoba Harvest that is, I think it's called Hemp Yeah, and it's a blend of hemp and pea protein, and it's actually sweetened with real sugar. And it's only like 8 grams, nothing crazy. but it tastes pretty good. Now, some pro athletes, definitely military, like aren't supposed to have hemp at all. So that's also something to consider. But, you know, there's also a lot out there that are, you know, if you're having just brown rice protein, the amino acid content probably isn't there to be as effective as some of these others.
Yeah. Well, so the one I was going to ask about rice and what the research is on that, because one of the ones that I like is the Rebuild by Tailwind. I don't know if you use any Tailwind products, but yeah. So I mean, I'm like, what I get like free samples for them in full disclosure, but I love their Rebuild and it tastes really good. And like, you can, I put like literally just like a scoop of the chocolate one in my coffee as like, that's almost like a mocha. And it's really yummy, but it has, so like, I guess two scoops, I think it has like 10 grams of protein, but it's like all the amino acids. And I think they must add something, I think, to make it so that all the essential amino acids are there. But yeah, I wasn't sure if there was anything on rice or if you had any thoughts on rice protein.
Yeah.
That's literally the only one I found, but it is very caloric. So it's like, you don't necessarily, like if you didn't do like a huge workout and you don't necessarily want all that sugar, then I guess then you just have real food.
But yeah, but anyways, again, it's the convenience of it. So for some people, that could be a benefit, though, that it is higher in energy and in calories if they, you know, if they're doing doubles every day or they're, you know, trying to keep their weight on and things like that. So, you know, there's different preferences for everyone for those reasons, too. But in terms of brown rice, you know, and I think there's a misconception, too. All plant foods do contain all of the essential amino acids. It's just the quantities that they're in. So,
yeah.
With brown rice, it's just that it doesn't have the same digestibility and bioavailability as something like the pea and the soy. But that doesn't mean it's not still giving you those things. So, I mean, if you're not, if here's the thing too, is thinking about if you're not a pro athlete and it's not like, you know, the milliseconds you're trying to shave off of something or the extra couple pounds you're trying to lift, then it probably isn't going to make that huge of a difference in the long run anyway.
And that's really that, I think that sums up pretty much everything we're talking about in this episode, right? I mean, especially when it comes to performance supplements, it's like, if you're not an elite athlete or a really high performing athlete, is it really worth the cost or whatever else is happening? Because like, obviously if you're a pro, if you're Olympian, whatever, like, yes, the millisecond of time that matters, that that's the difference between winning and not winning versus someone like me who it's just like, whatever.
Right. And that's even the thing too, with like athletic greens, it's literally called athletic greens. So no, average person that exercises three times a week, you don't need it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I will say, like, just to kind of close out the protein powder discussion, it's like, I'm usually getting these questions from people. Like I have a lot of Peloton clients and, you know, so there are people like they're very active and they're doing a lot of stuff on the Peloton bike and different types of workouts. But so it's not that they're not pushing themselves really hard, but like, again, is a protein powder really necessary in this circumstance? It's like, probably not, you know, it is easy though. And I think a lot of people, especially if they don't love, like, let's say they want to make a smoothie and they don't want to have yogurt for whatever reason, they don't like it or whatever. It's like, then they want a protein powder to put in instead. And that's where I'm like, no. You can use like yogurt and nuts and seeds and things like that. Like, but yeah, people are just, again, I think a lot of people are just looking for something quick and they also have this belief that you just need tons and tons of protein all the time,
right?
Which isn't necessarily true. And,
so then even when they're having it, they're overdoing it too.
Exactly. And you're not even using it all. But, like if you are to use these products, when are we typically, like we always hear about using them post-workout, I know you often hear like the casein and whey and like when to have what, if, cause you lift, right? You do more focused stuff. Is timing important aside from the standard stuff we hear about having it within the, you know, 60 minutes or 2 hours or whatever it is? What do you, anything you want to say here?
Not hugely. I think that, you know, other than, you know, thinking about ensuring that you're having protein and carbs together post-workout, that a lot of people forget about eating protein consistently throughout the day. So people are having these really high doses, maybe post-workout and then at dinner. And then, you know, maybe they're having an early dinner and they would benefit from having less at dinner and a little bit before bed or something like that. So maybe that's the time that you have, you know, especially this time of year that we're recording, maybe you decide that you're going to have a hot chocolate and add that delicious chocolate protein powder you were just mentioning to it at the end of the night. So that you're prepping your body, because really growth hormone is its highest right after you exercise and then right after you fall asleep. So those are the two biggest times to optimize repair. So, you know, just I would tell people to think a little bit more about the timing of their intake of protein and carbs paired together before bed.
Yeah, exactly. But for people who are doing like 2 protein shakes a day and like all that kind of stuff, like that really is not what it should be.
Exactly.
All right. Collagen supplements, which kind of falls under this category, but slightly different. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because we're again seeing this just, it's just so commonly seen, at least in the clients I see.
And they're adding it to like every food product too. Exactly. And it's marketed like crazy. So the thing with collagen that people don't realize is it's not a complete protein. So you're missing some essential amino acids there. And if you decide that you're going to start replacing real food or a real protein powder with collagen, you're not going to optimize muscle repair. So think about, what is the purpose of this? Is it because you heard, oh, collagen, that's cool and trendy and I probably should be taking it? Or is it, oh, I have really bad joint pain and I'm going to take this consistently to see if it maybe helps with my joint pain? Because that's really the only reason I would recommend it to an athlete.
Is there evidence supporting that, that it helps?
It's coming. I think that there's some there. There's some that's not. It's controversial. So I think it's not harmful. So again, this is something where... when I was working with MLB players and they had joint problems, we'd say, absolutely, take that, you know, NSF certified collagen, maybe it'll help you. But in the average, maybe it's not worth it until we have more research.
Yeah, yeah. There, what's, I'm blanking on what it's called, the other one that people often take for joints. What am I thinking of?
Glucosamine chondroitin.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah. And I think that, And, you know, that's definitely more osteoarthritis related. So, you know, I think that with the collagen, it may be similar, but I think there's also potentially an inflammatory piece there too. But again, we still have to wait and see. So I think that it's okay. I think that for some people, and I have osteoarthritis actually in my knee already, which is why I'll never be able to run a marathon like I'd like, but I tap out at that 13.1. But, you know, there's so many different things you can do with your diet to try to limit inflammation and, you know, eating more plants is part of that. But for some people, it's worth it to say, okay, here's what the research is saying. It's becoming more promising with something like collagen than it was 3 years ago. So even my stance on it has changed since then. And then again, think about, is this coming from a reputable brand or is it, you know, someone threw a gram of collagen into a protein bar or some like protein chips that they have at the store now.
Yeah. I mean, I see Vital Proteins. That's the one I see everybody promoting on Instagram, or I see it in Whole Foods. Like that's the one I see everywhere.
Right. And I think they do have an NSF coffee, version. Like, so in the MLB, that is what we use. They do have a marine collagen too. So that's another thing. If anyone listening is plant-based, or vegan, you're not going to get a vegan collagen supplement. And that's another thing that's been marketed. I saw a couple people post about how there was, you know, marketing fraud because they were promoting vegan collagen supplements, which just is literally not a thing. So it comes from, it comes from cattle. And if not, you can get it from, the marine version. So, you know, that is at least that, you know, you can think of Vital Proteins as a reputable brand because of the NSF at least.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. All right. So let's now move into performance supplements. Again, huge topic, and we're not going to cover all the things, but we'll kind of touch upon the ones that we feel are most relevant. So let's start by just introducing the world of performance supplements in case people don't really know what they are. So some are banned, many are harmful, many are, you know, many do not offer any benefit or very little benefit. You know, there's mixed evidence or no evidence on many of them, and many are extremely expensive. So when we're just kind of thinking about these supplements and, you know, they're all marketing themselves as enhancing performance and God knows what else, you know, we want to always ask ourselves the following questions. Is it safe? Is it legal? You know, especially if you are a, you know, a collegiate or pro athlete, is it worth it? And lastly, is it backed by science? Mm-hmm. So how many supplements actually fall into the category of yes answers here to all those questions?
So, you know, the safe and legal is one thing, but then is it worth it and backed by science is a total other, right? So, and I think that that really depends on, you know, the athlete, what is your level, you know, again, are you more of a recreational athlete or are you a college athlete? Are you trying to make the Olympics? Are you, you know, professional? So those questions all matter. And then what sport, what position, what are your actual goals? And, you know, that plays into whether it could potentially help your performance or not too.
Yeah, absolutely. So before we even go into the individual ones we're going to cover, do you think that any recreational athlete has any business taking any of performance supplements? And I'm going to kind of exclude caffeine because that's just okay. So widely used. Like yeah. That one is just, you know, whatever. It's all over the place. We accept that it helps, mm-hmm. from, you know, obviously to be careful with it, whatever. But aside from caffeine, anything else that you feel like recreational athletes really should be taking?
So I think it's hard to define recreational sometimes because something sure. like BCAAs may actually mm-hmm. benefit ultra endurance athletes with their immune system. Yeah. So if you're doing ultra okay. training and racing, but you don't consider yourself pro, then maybe. Creatine is another one that like my perspective totally flipped on when I started really digging into the research. So that might be beneficial too. But then there's a lot of others that it's just, you know, what's the point really?
Yeah. Okay. So let's dig into some of these. Let's start with the branched chain amino acids or BCAAs. Sure. I see a lot of people taking this before, after workouts, during workouts. Yeah. So is it worth it? What's the evidence? What type of athlete would benefit?
Right. And people just don't even know what it is. So branched chain mm-hmm. amino acids are three specific amino acids that are more easily used in one of our energy systems. If any of you took the fun science classes that us dietitians took in the Krebs cycle, also known as the TCA cycle, the branched chain amino acids are more easily able to enter that cycle and help to generate energy when your body is lower on carbohydrates. So, you know, what this is turned into is in the weightlifting world a little bit more is where these are promoted, that's where it started really. And now it's just gotten totally out of control.
I see it everywhere.
Everywhere. Right. So everyone that exercises thinks they need BCAAs, even without realizing what they do or what they are. So the idea was, okay, we'll have BCAAs before your workout and it'll boost your energy levels. Well, it's not going to boost your energy levels better than eating carbohydrates would. So having the real energy in your body that is most efficient to fuel those energy systems is the key. So if you feel like BCAAs are helping you lift more or feel more energized in a HIIT workout, then you're probably not eating enough carbs. And that could be before your workout. Mm-hmm. It could be the day before your workout, whatever it is. But that is, you know, not just my opinion. That's what science shows too. So a review study in the Journal of International Society of Sports Nutrition, you know, said that too in 2018. They said that any of these claims are completely unwarranted in terms of muscle protein synthesis and any type of anabolic response too, because they talk about it for energy, but then they also say, oh, BCAAs are going to help you build muscle. A lot of people then, kind of like with the collagen, end up taking BCAAs, but then they're not getting all of the other essential amino acids because they're not having, you know, the whole food sources that would be much better. But there have been a couple of studies showing that because it's so hard to keep up with your energy needs for ultra endurance training and racing, because your gut can only tolerate so many carbohydrates when your body's putting out so much energy to fuel those muscles, that BCAAs may be helpful for immune support, actually. So you can actually exhaust the branched chain amino acids in your body while trying to rely on them when you're lower on carbohydrate stores. This is people that are doing like, you know, 4-hour long training sessions. Or more, they get to the point where then those amino acids aren't there in adequate enough amounts to do their job for your immune system. So that's really, you know, the best link, the best evidence that I've found for potentially using them.
Okay. So endurance, ultra endurance stuff. And in what form are usually recommending that they take this, when and in what form?
Like again,
it comes in all different forms, right?
All different forms. I mean, that's something where if you're already using like an electrolyte packet or you're using a sports, like a sports drink type of powder, you know, add it to that. Some of those things are starting to include them in it too. But I also have had people where it's like they're adding pasteurized egg whites into their water bottles and they barely taste it and they mix it with their sports drinks. And then they're getting kind of more of a whole food source of amino acids while they're exercising too. Because it doesn't have to necessarily be branched chains in a supplement form. It could just be that you're ingesting protein during a little bit more often too.
Yeah. Got it. And so, I mean, could in theory, like, because obviously, especially with ultra endurance, when we're talking running, like people are eating food, right?
Exactly.
So they could be fine too. Eat food.
And a lot of people get, you know, stuck on, oh, I'm just going to have my carbs and I have these gels and these things and the super starch and all that stuff. But I mean, if you're having a peanut butter sandwich while you're on the trail, you know, then that's, you could add some hemp seeds and then that boosts the protein in there a little bit more too, but you probably get enough from the sandwich itself. So it is really more the people that are relying on products and aren't carrying around food for whatever reason that may be.
Yeah. So you may, so even if you are an ultra endurance athlete, you may not actually necessarily need this because it's, because you're saying it's during, it's not necessarily correct. Before or after, like we don't, so we're not seeing benefits if you're taking it before and after is what you're saying.
After, probably not. Maybe before, because you're getting that little bit of a boost. But again, if you're just including adequate protein, it might be sufficient too. And I don't think there's enough research comparing it to food. It's just more BCAAs versus not BCAAs. So
sure. And I think this is fallen under, or at least the research I've seen, like it's fallen under the category is like emerging research, like looks promising, but not strong evidence, like something like the caffeine or whatever. Okay, let's talk about beetroot supplements. Yep. Same questions.
Yeah, so beetroot is your, and we say beetroot, like think of a red beet. It's your best dietary source of nitrates. And in the body, nitrates convert into nitric oxide. And nitric oxide is a vasodilator, which means that it helps your blood vessels to enlarge so that there's more room for blood flow, which is supplying your muscles with energy, nutrients, oxygen, and then carrying away, obviously, all the waste from that too. So if there's more space and less pressure, you know, in theory that you can do that more efficiently. The issue with supplements versus like drinking 12 to 16 ounces of beet juice is how much are you actually getting of the nitrate once they've converted that into a powder or supplement form? And another dietitian, Marie Spano, actually had a good post on this today on Instagram. So once this episode is published, someone will have to probably look back on her feed for it. But I've, you know, done plenty of research. I did a continuing education course actually on beetroot for exercise and blood pressure. But when it comes to the powdered supplements, I hadn't actually done the research that Marie did. And it said that, you know, the majority of these powdered supplements do not contain the amount that you would need to actually see a benefit. So the other thing to consider too, is that this is another one where actually the opposite, if you're an elite athlete, you may be less likely to respond to the beetroot as compared to a recreational athlete, is what the research is starting to show. And then another fun fact, and this is something that a lot of studies didn't account for. So there's a lot of studies out there that aren't super valid in saying, oh, it's not, you know, the beetroot didn't result in any improvements in performance or blood pressure, or whatever it might be, is that a lot of the studies didn't control for people's use of antibacterial mouthwash because your oral microbiome and the bacteria there actually influence the conversion of the dietary nitrate into this nitric oxide in your body. So people who use mouthwash on a regular basis may actually not be converting it well, and that can affect blood pressure too, which is where there's the biggest evidence for beetroot being beneficial.
Interesting. I didn't even know that. See, I'm learning things too.
If I didn't have to write that continuing ed course, I wouldn't know it either.
No, I'm definitely like, you're way more up to date on all this research on the specific supplements than I am. This is really fascinating to me. So for beetroot, so I guess when I say supplements, I'm also including juice. So you're saying essentially that in order to receive a benefit, you need to have 14 to 16 ounces of beetroot juice. Is that
the juice is going to be the most effective way to get it? And again, there's concentrates, things like that. So really anywhere between 8 and 16, depending on what you're getting. But, you know, it's also, you know, just having a diet that's rich in nitrates could give you a consistent, you know, influx of this so that your blood vessels are always doing what they need to do. So if you already have a diet that's super rich in vegetables like beets and greens and celery and things like that, then it might not help you out that much versus someone who doesn't really like beets and they're like, okay, I'll try and choke down this beetroot supplement.
Yeah. And I mean, again, this is another great example of like, if you're not like, well, I guess if pro athletes don't even benefit from this, but still it's like, you're going to go to all this trouble. I mean, maybe you're a recreational athlete, but you're competitive and you really want to shave off time. But like, again, is it really worth it? Is it really shaving off that much time? Is it just like a fraction of a second or 1 second, you know? So is it worth it? Okay.
I will say though, just one last note on that. If you're taking a pre-workout right now, please just go take beetroot and some caaffeine instead. So that's, I think, one of the performance supplements we're not talking about because we don't really want people to be taking it, but you know, just these blends of like sketchy stimulant that, you know, they get people addicted to, just not worth it.
What are these? Which ones?
Just like the standard pre-workout supplements that are just called, quote, pre-workouts. You know, you have a lot of people that get addicted to the variety of stimulants in there, the high amount of niacin that makes your skin tingle, even though that's not affecting your performance at all. So that's something, especially people who are in the gym and are lifting a little bit more or doing these, again, HIIT type workouts, might be relying on. And this is what I try to transition them to if they really want to keep taking things like that.
The beetroot and the caffeine.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah, no, they're... I mean, there are all kinds of weird mix. Oh, there's just such scary stuff out there. And I'm sure you get all kinds of crazy emails. I know I do, like some random supplement company wanting me to partner with them. I'm just like, I know.
Delete.
Daily delete. Did you get my email? Yes, I did delete. Okay. Creatine. I want to hear all about this. I'm so fascinated. Because creatine, in my mind, I think back to like my college boyfriend who was like lifting and wanted to take creatine. I was like, don't take creatine. And I didn't know anything about it. I don't know. I wasn't a nutrition then. But what I think about it is just like people who are lifting. And obviously, I now know there's research backing, you know, in specific circumstances that it can be like for short bursts of energy and all this kind of stuff. But you have some other stuff to share. I want to hear all about all of it.
Yeah, so creatine, I think, got a bad reputation because so many creatine supplements are parts of other either pre-workout supplements or protein supplements that are not considered safe. And, you know, people would be inadvertently consuming anabolic steroids and these other things that were altering their mood and how they felt. And, you know, there's that whole class of supplements just isn't very safe a lot of the time. So I, you know, do want to preface this with, we're talking about creatine isolated by itself, creatine monohydrate specifically is where all the evidence is, but creatine is a compound that is naturally occurring in your muscles and there's a little bit in your brain, and it's made by our liver and our kidneys. However, it's also able to be ingested via meat and fish, especially you're going to get some from shellfish too. So when you think about, again, these diets that have no meat and fish at all whatsoever, those are actually the people that could probably benefit most from a creatine monohydrate supplement. And like I said, a few years ago, I would not have been the person saying, oh, you should definitely be taking creatine. It's, you know, beneficial for so many different people. You know, I just didn't see a use for it and kind of believed some of the hype with the myths about things like it, you know, causing cramping and, you know, having negative hormone effects. And really a lot of that was related to those bad supplements that it was just a part of. So what we know creatine does is it helps, it's actually a quicker source of energy than carbs, but it just doesn't last very long. So creatine forms with a phosphate in our body, which is how it stores energy. And it's what most rapidly replenishes energy for ATP, which is what fuels our cells. And I know I'm getting really sciencey, but I'm sure most people have at least heard of ATP before or remember it, right? So if we're most rapidly replenishing it with this, it's what's really beneficial for very high intensity activities, really quick and high intense bursts. So if you think about sprinting, if you're doing like a 100-meter dash, or if you're doing something where you're lifting amount of weight and you're, you know, either maxing out or just doing like 3 to 5 reps, then this could fuel that on its own. But then you run out of it. And this is where it's gotten, you know, you've gotten this idea that it's just for weightlifters, is that you need to, you know, wait like 3 minutes in between sets to replenish your creatine so that you can have it available again for those lifts. But we've also had research come out saying that it can potentially increase your aerobic threshold too, not just anaerobic. Mm-hmm. So there's some promising evidence for endurance exercise too. It may enhance glycogen synthesis. So glycogen being that stored carbohydrate in our muscles, which is also good news for endurance athletes, and even, you know, not endurance athletes, but a soccer player or a basketball player or tennis player, right? And, you know, in those sports, we used to just think there were these indirect benefits that if you could, you know, lift a little bit more when you were doing your cross training in the gym, then that's going to increase your power on the field or court or whatever you were doing. But again, some of these other things we're starting to see are exciting too. It might even enhance your ability to, you know, get energy from the mitochondria and, you know, doing its job. So there's all these cool things going on. But I think some of the cooler things that really sold me were its benefit to potential benefits for women during pregnancy and menopause and women's mental health too. So for me,
that's what fascinates me, because I always associate men and lifting, and I just didn't really think about it as being relevant to me at all. So yeah, that's right. Awesome.
And you know, some of the best research for it is, again, if there's any athletes listening who either they themselves or they have kids who are participating in sports like soccer or football and they're high risk for concussions, this is where this should like definitely be a part of their supplement plan if they were to have a concussion, like immediately, because we're seeing that, you know, it affects the brain, and that's where that mental health kind of comes in there too.
Interesting. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So, so in terms of how you recommend creatine now to people, what is
sure. So I am more likely to recommend it to females who don't include meat and fish in their diet, especially, but, you know, because there's so much promise for long-term benefits and negatives to taking just strictly that creatine monohydrate, I recommend somewhere between 3 and 5 grams a day. I personally was like super sick in my first trimester, so I stopped taking it, even though pregnancy is a good time to take it. But I just started again because during pregnancy, actually, they've seen that when you're taking supplements, your storage increases around 36 weeks in. And the idea is that that's preparing the body for labor so that it can maybe help with that a little bit too. So I did start taking it again for that reason. But at my level of athleticism, you know, not being a collegiate or professional athlete anymore, I wouldn't be taking it if it were just for lifting 5 more pounds while I'm squatting, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And what about menopause? What you mentioned menopause, what benefits do we see there?
Right. So again, we need more studies, but the few that have been done have shown better retention of muscle mass during menopause, which is a time when women don't just lose bone, they tend to lose muscle too. And that maintenance of muscle can actually help with bone strength and then functionality later in life. So that I think is a pretty cool area to continue to follow. And again, because there's really no drawbacks we're seeing, could be worth it to women who are going through menopause.
Awesome. Thank you for sharing that. So cool. Yeah. I remember seeing that on your Instagram and I was just like, oh yes. I was like, that's when I was like, must get Kelly on my show. Now. And I saw another thing. And I was like, oh my God, we have to talk about this. Testosterone boosters. Let's chat about that.
Yeah. So there's a ton of them out there. Most of them are banned. When you look at things that are really marketed as testosterone boosters, you know, especially after we went through all that MLB stuff back in the day. So when you look at probably the most popular one that is natural, it's arginine. And arginine became popular because it's a precursor of both creatine and nitric oxide, but people think that it's going to also increase growth hormone and testosterone. So that makes it popular, but the potential to increase those things is really just theoretical. And there's really not evidence to support claims that it's going to promote improvements in athleticism. So what we found is that if you're taking arginine and it, you know, results in a little bit of an increase in growth hormone or testosterone right away, the body just starts to not work as hard to create testosterone on its own. So, you know, it's not really actually giving a consistent long-term increase. It just makes your body not create as much as it could. So it's kind of a waste of money, is how I look at it. I think that, again, it's probably not going to harm people, but really not helpful. And for anyone who has had blood work done, especially in if there's any male endurance athletes listening or male, you know, athletes recreationally who just have gone on a lot of diets and have tried to cut carbs or, you know, think a little bit more about physique than the average person, it may just be that you're not eating enough calories. So that's a whole nother, you know, topic in and of itself, is how not eating enough, how dieting regularly, how exercising more than what you're taking in an energy can result in hormone imbalances for both males and females. It's not just a female thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And for the males, you're specifically talking about having low testosterone.
Exactly.
Correct?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Awesome. I mean, is arginine, creatine, are these even sports legal?
They are. Yep. So thing again is that you want to find an NSF or informed choice product. So creatine, absolutely safe. The thing is too, is NCAA is very, very, very strict. So strength coaches, dietitians, they cannot recommend supplements of almost any form to their athletes other than protein supplements, I believe, is still what's going on. So while you can still choose to take them on your own, your athletic department cannot be providing them to you or recommending anything specific.
Interesting. Let's talk about caffeine just briefly. I mean, it's so widely used, but we can just briefly mention, you know, for any listeners who are wondering why it's in so many products, especially in recent years, it's like exponentially grown and gotten into everything. Why it's there, what it does, how much, like, I think a lot of people understand why it's there, but the question of how much, how often to take it, like, does every gel, like, should we take every gel as a caffeinated gel or a drink or whatever? Or
that's a really good point. So thinking about it in the sports supplement, or I guess endurance supplement formats too. So caffeine is an effective stimulant, right? And it's considered to be a safe stimulant. So far as we know now too, it actually does not, while it can act as a diuretic, it's not supposed to cause too much of a diuretic effect unless you're going overboard with the amount that you're taking in, which really is based on weight too, which I can get into as well. But the effects that caffeine is having on the central nervous system can benefit endurance performance in terms of your energy levels, your time to exhaustion, in terms of your mental state too, which I think a lot of people maybe like notice when they really think about it, but they don't think like, oh, I'm going to take this before this race because it's going to help me stay mentally sharp while I'm racing or training. Right. And then there's also evidence that it can be helpful for lifting too, which again, even if you're an endurance athlete and you're doing cross training, if that's going to help you out, then that's pretty beneficial as well. So there's all these different ways that it is from a central nervous system perspective helping you. And that's, you know, even from endurance performance, it's anywhere from like 20 to 250 minutes where we have actual research saying that it's going to be beneficial. So in terms of the doses, typically what a review study has shown, a pretty significant review study showed that when you're taking in caffeine in doses between 2 and 6 milligrams per kilogram of your body weight. Okay. So we're really getting into, you know, specifics here, that there is going to be improved performance. If amounts lower than that probably aren't going to result in much of a performance benefit. Amounts higher than that is when it starts to make people jittery. It can affect your heart health in a negative way. And that's where you get into it being too much from a diuretic and hydration perspective too. So the 2 to 6 milligrams per kilogram, like an hour before exercise. But if you're doing longer term activity, you don't want to have 6 milligrams per kilogram beforehand. You would want to do closer to that 2. And then during the race, again, you can't just say this many gels for everyone because it is a weight-based thing. You might want to think about either the gels or the blocks now. I think few brands have those in caffeinated form too. So it's really something that
and
either...
drinks.
And some of the drinks too. You're right. They're adding it into a lot of different products. So I'm going to think about all these different products. I, you know, for the most part, find that people like to have a mix of products instead of just doing caffeine the whole time, because you can go overboard for sure.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Or like people will do like every other gel or whatever.
Yeah.
And obviously there's, you know, a point, like you have to also assess like, what is your stomach? Like how strong is your stomach?
Yeah.
And are you sensitive? Does like it cause you to have to go to the bathroom, or kind of what's going on there, or what kind of, like if you're an ultra runner, like, are you running through the night and when do you want to time your caffeine? And
right.
There's lots of things to think about. What about just having coffee versus sports supplements? Like, can we just have coffee and use that instead?
So the only hard thing with coffee is knowing exactly how much caffeine you're getting. So if you're trying to not go over a certain limit and you know you're going to be taking it in gel or drink or block form during your race, and it's a longer race, then you just want to be a little bit careful with that. Or maybe you want to get one of those. There's so many different like cold brews that you can get in those cans that you know the dose that's in there because they have to report it. I think they have to report it, or maybe they just do report it. But I tend to see those cold brews do tell you how much are you getting. in, you know, 8 ounces, let's say, and you can kind of dose out from there versus just brewing coffee or picking it up at Starbucks or your local coffee shop or whatever.
Sure.
But yeah, I'm an advocate for just drinking coffee if, you know, at least it's something that you like, and then having a normal breakfast and then relying on those sport products during.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I mean, and there's so many products. I mean, I think like with those like caffeine gum, like there's just like so many.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's nuts. All right. Awesome. One last one in this category, beta alanine. I think this is one that has a pretty solid amount of research supporting it. But yeah, tell us about that.
Yeah. So with beta alanine, I tend to send people with, you know, things like this to the ISSN, which, you know, there's plenty of different resources, but International Society of Sports Nutrition tends to do a good job collecting all the data. And, you know, really their most recent position, even back in 2015, was pretty supportive of using beta alanine to help with, muscle concentrations of a compound called carnosine. And so they're finding, though, is that your supplementation has to be somewhere between 4 to 6 grams of beta alanine for at least 2 to 4 weeks. So that's the other thing with some of these, like you have to be consistent. If you know you're not the type of person to be consistent with it, it's probably not worth it. And that it may improve, especially shorter exercise. Like if you're doing marathons, beta alanine might not be the thing. It may help, but the more of the research is for activity that's going to be like 25 minutes or less, not necessarily like weightlifting, but we're going to have to keep from getting fatigued for, you know, 5 to 25 minutes. So tactical, we're thinking like firefighters and things like that. Military might be where this is really beneficial. So for the average person, you know, it's really not worth it.
Yeah. Okay. Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah.
All right. Let's move into just some other random things we see people taking or asking about. We already talked about fish oil, so that's all set. Probiotics. This is one we see all the time. And it's obviously like the whole gut health and microbiome. Like there's so much research going on. There's lots of talk about all this. What are your thoughts on probiotics?
Yeah, I think that it's tough with probiotics because there's so many different blends that you can get from them, so many different things that people are trying to treat with them. And I think that, you know, unless, and we mentioned Thorne earlier, they actually have something you could pay a few $100 if you want, and they can kind of test your microbiome and then tell you, you know, which types of probiotics might be better for you to take. But even they admit that, you know, they don't have all the answers yet, and there's still a lot more that we need to figure out. So I don't think that it's harmful if you're taking a blend of them. And if you are going to take them, I actually recommend to people switching up their probiotic supplements because let's say that you're, first of all, the reason to not take a blend, maybe you decide that you're going to take a probiotic and there's one strain in there and that's not the strain that you actually need for whatever's going on wrong in your gut, then that's going to start to maybe overpower some of those other bacteria that are struggling to thrive and help you feel good. So having a blend, this is one where Now products and Thorne products that I mentioned earlier have blends that are going to give you like 6 to 10 different strains of bacteria that are going to be more specific to certain things. And they'll tell you like, this is more of a gut health one. This is more of an immune one. And we do have some of the research to suggest that, some even, you know, with mental health too. But if you're taking those blends, I would even toggle between a couple different ones to make sure that you're not putting in too much of the same thing to affect your gut health. And the other thing with, you know, probiotics too, is that, again, a diet that is just consistently going to be providing whole plant foods in a variety of forms, that's going to provide the prebiotics that really lay the foundation for all of this. So again, I'm more foods first, and then if that's not helping whatever's going on, or again, you're an elite athlete and you're like with MLB across the board, we had an immune blend that we would give them because they were traveling and, you know, playing 8 games in a week sometimes. So, you know, those are the situations where it was, yes, this is worth it, but we also want a solid dietary foundation. Most other people, let's have a solid dietary foundation and then we'll talk about it.
Yeah. Yeah. And probiotics, of course, we can get some in food as well. So,
right.
Like, do, you know, it's not necessarily like everybody needs to take probiotics, but if you're really struggling with digestive issues, maybe it might benefit, right?
Right. And at that point, too, I would want to be working with, you know, someone in a gastroenterologist, right? And seeing some other tests done before, you know, anything specific's prescribed. But like you said, there's plenty of foods. There's, you know, yogurt and kefir and non-dairy versions of them. And obviously kombucha. I wouldn't say just consume kombucha for your probiotics. Yeah. But things like miso and sauerkraut and, you know, plenty of those foods.
Yeah. Awesome. I'm just mentioning this one, not because like so many, but I've just seen this like several times in people and I don't understand why it's like being recommended. Digestive enzymes. In people who do not have pancreatic issues or other medical problems, they're just like, oh, you should like other people will recommend them. I don't know. I don't understand.
Yeah.
Do you have any kind of thoughts on this?
I cannot say that I promote them at all. I just don't see a purpose. I will say that, you know, right now I've been dealing with acid reflux my whole pregnancy and I'm trying like anything and everything. So like those papaya enzyme are supposed to maybe help with acid reflux. And I don't know if they're actually helping, but that's one thing where I'm like, if you're maybe helping a little bit, I'll totally take it right now. But for the average person who is, again, not seeing a gastroenterologist or some other specialist who is recommending these things at like more of a prescription level, I really don't see the point. And I don't think there's really evidence at all to back it.
Yeah, exactly. That's one of those things where like someone's coming to me with like 10 different random things they're on. And I'm like, get rid of that now. Yeah. Like, really, unless something's going on that I don't know about, like there's no reason.
Right. And most reputable brands, I don't think are producing them and promoting them either.
Yeah, exactly. One last thing, MCT, your medium chain triglycerides. That's something we sometimes see, like obviously it's used more in the clinical setting amongst people who have trouble digesting fat, but we've seen it kind of creep into the athletic world and otherwise, or weight loss world or whatever you want to call it. And then like the promotion of coconut oil and all that.
Right.
What do you have to say about and specifically like the MCT oil?
Yeah. I mean, to keep it short and sweet, if one of them was going to help, it would be MCTs and not coconut oil, because some of the coconut oil fatty acids really mimic more long chain. Whole nother story. Mm-hmm. But I still don't think there's even enough evidence to suggest that we should be, you know, promoting MCTs, especially over, you know, carbohydrates when there's so many different forms of them that can be helpful. And in terms of MCTs and fat metabolism and all of that, it's just the research isn't there.
Yeah, exactly. Awesome. Thank you so much. That was just awesome. That's exactly what I was looking for. I think that my listeners are really going to find all of this super, super, super helpful. Do you have any good resources that you want to share if people just want to learn more or search for a good brand or learn more about all the supplements? You mentioned the ISSN. Anywhere else that you'd recommend people go?
Yeah. If I'm like, there was this study, I do just like Google ISSN and whatever that is, but also British Journal of Sports Medicine will come out with some positions and reviews sometimes. But US Anti-Doping Agency, World Anti-Doping Agency, they have, you know, updated information. Like I said, NCAA kind of just, you know, they're like, don't take anything. So you're not going to find much there. But Aegis Shield, AegisShield.com, they actually have a database where you can like plug in different supplements and it'll tell you if it's like, you know, green means go. We're not really sure and definitely don't take that. And they do have kind of a stream of updated reports on their homepage usually. I actually haven't been to the site in a while, so I hope they still do this.
Yeah.
But
but
if showing like, oh, the FDA is investigating this or, you know, this brand and supplement just got in trouble for that. And then NSF for Sport has an app. And I will mention, you know, I think we're both kind of in the same page with, you know, we don't want people to be taking things that have all these artificial ingredients.
Yeah.
I think Red Bull is even considered like NSF certified or something like that. So we're not saying that like everything that's NSF certified is healthy. I think at one point it was at least that all of it is healthy. We're just saying it doesn't contain banned substances. So keep that in mind too, that, you know, you want to have a supplement that has good ingredients and is also NSF certified.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think Red Bull does like, they sponsor athletes. So that's
right.
That's
exactly. Right. They must be. Yeah. Or there must be like an NSF version or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Anything else you'd like to add to this discussion that you feel like we missed? I think we were pretty comprehensive, but yeah.
Anything else? I think we dove into a lot. So I hope that it was helpful.
Awesome. No, this is fantastic. Well, aside from the awesome news that you're becoming a family of four this spring, what else is on the horizon for you? You know, do you want to share any projects or anything else, you know, that's going on for you, past or current or future?
Sure. Yeah. I have a course with another dietitian and runner that is more geared towards females that have dealt with disordered eating. So that's called Fit Fueling. And we've run that for a while, and it's been self-paced online for about a year now. And then
that's
with
Heather,
another,
right?
With Heather Kaplan. Yep.
He was one of my first guests on this podcast.
Oh, fantastic. Love to hear that. Yeah. She's a podcast expert for sure.
Yes.
So I run that with Heather, and then myself and Angie Ashy, a little bit more focused on if anybody listening is a dietitian, but we are launching a course for sports dietitians or sports nutrition professionals in general that want to go a more entrepreneurial route. So that should be launching in January. And then hopefully before my actual next baby comes, I am launching a new website, and I haven't really announced this to anyone but my team yet, but I'm launching a new website specific to student athletes. So it'll be studentathletenutrition.com. It's in the works, and it's going to have some free resources for sure, like free downloads and blog posts, but it's going to have webinars and courses for parents, coaches, athletes themselves to try to bridge the gap. That's a huge gap that exists with access to dietitians for high school and collegiate teams, because there's only a few teams in the collegiate world, especially, that actually have access to a dietitian and valid information. And there's just like a black hole out there of invalid information too. So the goal is to help, you know, just provide more valid information to those individuals.
That's amazing. Congrats. It's such an awesome venture. Yeah. I'm excited to check that out. Yes. And where can everyone find you on social media and your website and all of that?
Yeah. So on Instagram is probably where I'm most active, at Kelly Jones RD. And then you'll see similar stuff, maybe a little bit extra with articles on Facebook, just Kelly Jones Nutrition. And my website is simply kellyjonesnutrition.com.
Awesome. And we're just going to wrap this up with my quick bites questions, and then I'll let you get on your way because I know we're running late. Favorite meal or snack when you're in a hurry?
Definitely just taking some tempeh, like not even cooked, and throwing some buffalo sauce and a cheese spread on a pita and like running out the door.
Nice. Favorite meal or snack when you're not in a hurry?
Probably stir fry. I love like a spicy peanut stir fry.
Awesome. Favorite post-race meal or snack?
Always an omelet with a side of pancakes. So I'll get like the toast and everything that comes with the omelet. But then I like to, when we used to be able to go out and after races, go to restaurants and stuff, would get a side of pancakes. And if it wasn't for me, I'd share it with whoever else was with me.
Yum. Biggest cooking catastrophe?
Cooking catastrophe. I'm still not great at cooking fish. So I, salmon, I think I've gotten there, but, shrimp especially like always tastes fishy to me no matter what I do. So I know that that's not a very specific experience, but I can't get it right.
That's okay. Can't do everything perfectly right. Most bizarre or exotic food that you've ever had?
I don't eat meat at all anymore, but my friend, when she graduated from high school, had a pig roast at her graduation party. And I definitely tried some like weird pig parts at that point. I don't know if it was like brain or the heart or something like that, but something weird like that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wait, where are you based, by the way? I forgot to ask.
I'm outside of Philadelphia. I grew up in Connecticut.
Oh, nice.
Right of Philly.
Oh, okay. Very cool. Awesome. You eat eggs, right?
I do. Yep.
Okay. So how do you like your eggs cooked?
Lately over hard has been like the only way I can tolerate them, but I usually enjoy them in any form, poached or, you know, if they're scrambled or in an omelet form. Omelet probably would be my most often. That's what I would typically say would be my favorite.
Yeah. What is your favorite beverage? And it can be outside of pregnancy or during pregnancy.
I mean, if I wasn't pregnant, I love a good margarita. But typically I really just love a good cup of like really dark coffee, like an Americano. I like love that in the morning. And right now it sounds disgusting to me while I'm pregnant, but that's typically my favorite thing.
Isn't it funny how that works? Yeah. Pregnancy is so weird. What are your comfort foods?
Comfort foods. So I go to like chili usually if we're thinking like really comforting, especially this time of year. But I also really love cupcakes. So if I'm like having a sweet tooth type of experience, I would love a cupcake that's just like loaded with frosting. Frosting's the best part to me.
Do you like to bake or is it you would buy it?
I love to bake, but I mean, with my busy life right now, especially with cupcakes, I'd probably just find a good local bakery.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. What is your favorite ice cream flavor if you eat ice cream?
So ice cream doesn't really do it for me, but I'd probably go with like a cookies and cream.
Okay. I guess we could say, what's your favorite cupcake flavor then?
No, because that would just be straight vanilla, but we could say cookies and cream for ice cream. It's fine.
Got it. And lastly, top three items of gear that are most essential to your active lifestyle.
Ooh, that's definitely tough. But I mean, if I'm thinking of when I'm running more, because I mean, in the gym, I could like have anything when I'm lifting, but when I'm doing more running and I guess tri training too, even, you know, my Nathan bottle that's handheld, I hate wearing the belts with all the stuff and I'll just refill that whenever I can. Other gear. Ooh, this is tough. I mean, what do people tend to say for you? Can I say like,
I mean, it's whatever comes to mind. I'm not trying to trick you, I promise.
Yeah.
Some people cheat and say like all of my hiking gear. I'm like, no, that's not what I meant.
No, so definitely my Nathan bottle. I mean, my regular running belt is helpful too. And then in the winter, if the temperature drops below 55, my feet get so cold. So I love the Features brand wool socks. Those are like a must for me.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Any other clothing or shoes or headgear or anything like that?
Well, I will say too, I mean, and again, not even really brand specific, but also when it gets colder, my ears get cold immediately. So I have to just have like a running headband on all the time.
Awesome.
And now
awesome.
I'm on the hunt for a good athletic mask. So.
It's rough, but important, obviously.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Kelly. Like this has been super, super informative. I think this is just a very helpful episode and one that is much needed out there because there's just so much craziness in the supplement world. It is, it just gets me very frustrated sometimes.
Yeah. Same.
Yep. Awesome. Well, I'm wishing you best of luck with the rest of your pregnancy. I definitely want to be back on the show at some point to talk about plant forward nutrition and kind of dig into your diet because I know it's one of your specialties as well.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, but have a wonderful holiday season. And
same to you. Again. Thank you for having me. Thanks for choosing me for such a critical topic.
Awesome. Thank you.
So that's our show for today. I hope you learned a lot. I certainly did, as always with my guests. Just really love this conversation and getting real deep into some of these things. So thank you again, Kelly, for your time and your knowledge and sharing it all with us. I know I really appreciate it. And I know my listeners will as well. Did we hit everything that you wanted to know about? If not, let me know. If there's something we didn't cover and you're curious, feel free to reach out. You can email me anytime, with any sort of feedback. eatforendurance@gmail.com. You can find me on Instagram, eatforendurance, Facebook as well, of course. And as always, I'm always asking you guys to leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts, iTunes. Really would appreciate it as I'm trying to grow the audience and get this to as many ears as possible. Right now, it's still a passion project of mine, but I do have visions of this growing in the future and hope to continue as long as I'm able. So I hope you guys have a really, really happy holidays. We're recording right after Thanksgiving, but by the time I release this, oh my gosh, I think it'll almost be the new year or somewhere around there. So hope you guys are all safe and healthy and have a very, very wonderful holiday season. Despite everything happening, there is truly so much to be grateful for. Thanks guys for listening. I always appreciate your support.